name's Wade Crawford, also known as the Duck Man. From Ontario, Six Nations, the Grand River, Haudenosaunee, Oneida Nation, Oneyuga, Turtle Clan, and currently residing on Coast Salish territory and otherwise known as Vancouver for the time being.
So we're there today to talk about the Soka Oka crisis,
yeah.
Struggle that you participate to. That was in 1990, so 20 years after we are today.
Yeah, time sure as flew. Doesn't seem like that long ago, really, but yeah, it's been 20 years.
What was this struggle for you? What represent this struggle for you?
Well, it was me, like, kind of coming of age. I was, you know, just finishing high school, and I didn't have a lot of direction at the time. I was, you know, smoking a lot of pot back then, and I had to find something to get my fire burning, something that impassioned me.
How did you heard about these struggles going on?
Well, I had one of my friends call me up, and he told me basically what was going on. He was like kind of a mentor to me, and he was about 7 years older than me. He said he wanted to go, and I should go with him, and we could do something for our people. So I said, sure.
So you heard about this conflict, this struggle, by your friend?
Yeah. I was about ready to do kind of anything, fly by the seat of my pants. So I just picked up and went with them. Yeah, there was like four of us that went all together. We went there and kind of talked to the people there, what was happening, and said we came to help, and we got the call out, basically. We asked where we'd be most suited to go, and they said that they wanted us to go to the Mercier Bridge, so that's where we shut her down there and kind of held that as our post.
What was the main purpose to shut down the Mercy Bridge?
Well, the main purpose was to prevent any like army personnel from getting over to Gunnysatake from Montreal. That was like the main way that they would have got through. They wanted to open that bridge, there was a couple of reasons, really. Like, the other one was to cut the flow of traffic into Montreal, which would put everything to a standstill there. And they'd have to go, like, 3 hours to get around, which would take them 10 minutes, you know. Yeah, and to keep the military and that away, at bay, anyways, for as long as possible.
How this participation to the struggle, this blockade, that was your first, like, real implication in this kind of struggles, changed your life?
It made me realize that we had a lot that we have lost as a people. It made me realize that, like, the imperialist, like, corporate Canada had little or no respect for us at all. And they were willing to go to any lengths to see their interests go through, like, you know, to be productive for them or whatever, at our peril, you know what I mean?
The struggles show a lot of racist demonstration by the French people from Quebec and by the white people in general. How did you feel about that?
Well, I'd like to say I was surprised, but I wasn't. I wasn't, because as a youth growing up, I've always heard racist remarks from not just whites, but other people of color even, and I was just, I can't say I was used to it, but I wasn't surprised because there was always underlying racism with our people from others, whether it was in Oka or like Caledonia. Caledonia, I was a bit more surprised when we were at the reclamation there, because a lot of people that I knew and that I grew up with, I seen them on the news, and like I seen them on the other side of the line, like screaming racist remarks, and that hurt when it was people I knew. So it just made me that more impassioned to stay there longer, stay there. Like I lived there. I lived at the site in Caledonia, you know, because that kind of racism, you know, I didn't feel our people there were safe, and I wanted to stay there, so I just lived there for a year.
On the reclamation site?
Yeah, yeah.
Fighting against the condo development?
Yeah, yeah. Just, we had taken the land back, and at that point, I was just holding it, you know, keeping it held down, keep any further development going on. And a lot of the threat wasn't from the police at that point. They could have came in any time, but we were getting constantly threats on, like, emails and stuff like that, death threats and, you know, just all around, hearing threats all over the place, and people saying they're going to kill us, and, you know, just, like, start singling out Native people, and that's why a lot of us stayed at the site and moved there. How can I compare, like, Oka and Caledonia?
Yep.
Well, I was a bit shocked at how impassioned with hate people could get over something that we were doing. We were merely, like, trying to save our land. It was almost like a passion play, something, you know, like Nazis doing, screaming bloody murder, you know. People throwing rocks at us, and any way they could, they would try to just hurt any of us at any time at the heat, at the height of the reclamation.
Many people denounce the use of arms by the Mohawks during the so-called Oka crisis. How did you feel about that?
Feel about them denouncing the use of arms? Well, to me, the guns, I think to most of us, the guns was merely symbolic of that. We were willing to fight them with it because our guns were less superior, like far less. They had way more military, you know, guns, and they had a lot more than we had. So it was just basically a symbolic that we were willing to fight.
How do you perceive the change since 90 of the indigenous struggles or the indigenous reality in Canada?
The struggles have always been there, right? We're dealing with the same things, whatever happened to that. I know they never, you know, cut the pines down to make their back 9 holes there, but I don't know if the land was ever given back, the Mohawks, or the fight is still there, like, the fight is still there, from Iperwash to Gustafson Lake and Burn Church. It's always the government's interests, and it always involves our people, and it's them taking more than we're willing to give.
In the same time that the genocide continue, this huge battle have to continue and continue in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to look towards the youth now, because I was 18 when I went to Oka, like the same age as a lot of the young guys were at Caledonia, and that was their first experience. Like guys that I mentored and were like becoming men now, they're like 18 men, so they're, that was 4 years ago now, so they're in their early 20s now. I'm hoping they learned. They learned enough from Caledonia and to keep the fight on. I'm almost 40 now, so been a part of a lot of struggles. So I'm hoping those youth that were there will be able to keep the fight up. It's unfortunate that they have to. And my daughter's a big part of it. She's been there in Caledonia, and she's been out here in BC, and she's been a part of these struggles as well, doing direct actions. And I'm proud of these young folks, and especially proud of my daughter. So they have to keep it up.
Thank you.
after Caledonia and this reclamation site and your struggle there, you quit to come here in the West Coast?
I was getting that cabin fever, I guess they call it there. I was getting a little distraught at times, that often there was myself and maybe four other people at the site. It's a big reserve, eh? So, you know, in Six Nations there, and we thought we could keep it going, you know. We knew it would die down somewhat, but like, I gave up a lot to be there. Like, I gave up a lot to be there, and I guess I expected everyone else to do the same. After a year, a little bit after a year, I was there like 13 months. And I decided to focus my energies towards the anti-Olympic struggle. I had an opportunity to come out here and become a part of that. So it was a nice change of scenery. So I took that on, and I like it out here. So.
And you continue to struggle here, as you were talking about, like the blockade that you made with other people at the 12 and Clark corner.
Oh yeah, that was in solidarity with Tyendinaga and
another Mohawk community. Yeah. Struggle.
Yeah, and at the quarry there, and they were surrounded. They had weapons pulled on them there, and very much like what happened at the raid in Caledonia, and people were terrified, you know. They thought they were going to get mowed down at any moment. So out here, like, my girlfriend there at the time and I put together a group of our friends, you know, basically, and kind of had a bit of a call out and had a meeting and just rounded up as many people as we could and locked 12 and Clark and shut down their kind of commuter line there. Tried to hit their economy a little bit there, just to let them know that we weren't going to stand quietly, even though we were out here in the West Coast. We wanted them to know that we were here too.
Describe the machine that killed everybody.
Yeah, it's the machine, the evil empire. As Zach De La Roca would say, the evil empire, and it's like, yeah, man, you gotta fight them or they'll roll over you to get what they want.
And also, fighting on a grassroots level against, like, the so-called your own institution as the band council.
Yeah, that's, well, not my own, but
that's what I said to Suka.
Yeah. I have nothing to do with the band councils, and I have little respect for the band council and the people who participate in them. We have some of our own clan mothers that are working directly in band council, which is quite appalling, and it's unfortunate that it's there. It was pressed on us by the government. They didn't think our traditional leadership was good enough, so forced on us. So, yeah, real traditional people shouldn't have anything to do with band council.
So that makes also the difference, the struggles in Nuka and the struggles in Caledonia. At the 12 and Clark blockade, also different struggles that you participate in that was not organized by those institutions?
No, they, yeah, we don't invite band councils to, you know, to the things we do. Like with Caledonia, they were trying to take the lead, or what they were saying, they'd take the lead, and then they would say that they would hand over the negotiations and the power to the traditional, the longhouse, right? And it's like, a lot of people are saying, you know, like, you have any power over us anyway. It was a people-led action. It was done by the people. Band council had nothing to do with it. it was like a few women that started it, and it just grew from there. Just grew from there, and it became big.
And how do you perceive now all those fights, all that that changed your life?
Well, it's changed in good ways. I know where I stand, like, I know I can't be bought. I know I can't be bought, and that's a good thing. And I, if there's anything bad about it, it would be that, you know, I became jaded and, like, seeing, like, the government, like, persist in the same old routines and trying to, like, bribe our people, and some people falling for it and others resisting, keeping the fight going.
How do you perceive in that context the relation and struggles between non-native and natives?
We have a lot of non-native allies, you know, like the anarchists, for instance, like, they're pretty good. They're got a bit of a bad rap on some of the things, you know. They've been pretty good with us, and they acknowledge whose land they're on, and they've shown me nothing but respect. I'm happy to call them my friends, you know. And I just see it as, like, if they can do it to Native people, you know, they can do it to white people, they can do it to black people, Asian people. They can fuck you over if they can, you know, if you let them. If you let them, they'll do it. So it's not just about us, it's about everybody a lot of times.
And it's about the entire system.
Yeah, it's the, yeah.
And the connection between the states, the capitalism,
sure.
The colonization.
They're not that different. They're both imperialist countries. It's all about greed and capitalism and dismay of many. not just natives, but because it was our, like, traditional lands, I guess we've taken the biggest hit out of anybody else.
What can be done?
Well, we have to keep up the fight. We have to converge when there's injustice, and when these certain tribes, so, like, even out west here, right? When they have mines built on their land without permission, you know, all they have to do is ask for help. People will show up. People will show up. People who care. People who know what they're going through will come, and they will defend them. Like I would, whether it be like Fish Lake, you know, that's sounds like that could turn into a mess. So if they need people.
You mean the fight against the mine?
Yeah.
The copper and,
yeah,
and coal mine
that, yeah,
they want to set up in the middle of the Fish Lake.
Yeah.
The Stone Bini in their language, the Tsilkutin people.
Mm-hmm. Like if it's band council that asks, I won't come. But if it's like a grassroots, people-led, you know, struggle, I will come then.